Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. This is Debbie Verney.
Good morning. This is Dave Kubikin.
And we're two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm. We're going to be here for the next hour to answer your questions on estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning, and you could be our very first caller at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900 or toll-free 1-800-WROW-590. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Debbie. What's going on?
Not much.
Cold outside. Yeah, I was going to say, so Sarah, I woke up and it was about 3 or 4 here, so Saratoga must have been below.
Yes, yeah. It was below. I put Nellie's little fleece on her. She has like this little fleece to go out and walk this morning because she was a little chilly.
So when she walks, that means you're walking too.
Oh, yeah, it was cold out. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's the 15th of February, right? We're at the midpoint of February. In 2 little weeks, it's March. And then, you know, March is the beginning of the end. So
March Madness, like basketball.
Well, yeah, but, you know, at the end of March, we're not talking about this anymore, right, Ben? You promised.
I promised we will not talk. Yes, I did. Okay. Yes.
So, you know, the night is darkest right before dawn or whatever the saying is. We're almost there is my point. If you're at home, you're in front of a fire listening to the radio, go back to sleep. Obviously, we're happy to take your phone calls, but hang in there. We're almost through it. It's been a pretty, you know, knock on wood, it's been a pretty good winter.
It has. It's been a lot better.
We'll take it.
We'll take it, definitely. Yeah. We're not all lucky like Ben and got to go down to Florida.
It was so nice. I just did not want to come back. To have 2 Saturdays off in a row was just outstanding.
Wonderful.
I missed you guys, though. I'm glad I'm back.
Yeah, we were really happy for you that you went down there.
Yeah, I'm sure you are.
I don't know if you could hear it from my voice.
You know, when it was 87 on Thursday, I'm thinking, it's just a little bit too warm for me. Everybody else was loving it, but, you know.
Well, welcome back.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
So it's been real busy. You asked Ben asked right before we started, have you guys been busy? I said, well, we sure have. I mean, I'm seeing Debbie for the first time in a little while.
Yeah, it's true.
We're busy because we're busy. This is kind of our busy season. Last year, apparently, was our busy season. And normally the winter, I think, is our busy season. Just things happen and to people as they age, and sometimes the winters are a little tougher. But also people get through the holidays and their New Year's resolution. They feel like acting on all the things that they've been postponing.
I've had 4 of those.
Really?
I've had 4 people so far this year that have literally come in and said, this has been our New Year's resolution for like the last 5 years, and we're finally doing it.
Oh, that's great.
So I thought that was pretty cool. That's the most I've ever had that actually followed through. Of course, my New Year's resolution that I've had for like the last 7 years, I still haven't followed through on it.
What's that?
To learn how to parallel park.
You don't know how to parallel park?
I do not.
I can teach you in like 5 minutes outside right after the radio. Seriously. There's a whole, yeah.
So, you know, my car will parallel park itself and I still don't do it.
Apparently someone grew up in the Midwest where they didn't have to parallel park at all, Ben.
I was the best parallel parker at Xavier High School in Middletown, Connecticut. I could literally do that K-turn and just pull right in. So I could help you too, Deb.
I know.
Right out in the parking lot.
It's sad.
That's
isn't
such
it?
An easy New Year's resolution.
It really is. We should be able to help you with that.
In fact, everyone hold on for 5 minutes.
We're
going
to go outside.
We'll be right back.
Well, maybe we should put on American Pie. That's about 8 minutes long if you want to get this done.
Very good. So American Pie was one of the, if I had ever had like at a diner where you could put quarters in for a song, it was like American Pie and you know, Paradise by the Dashboard Light, a couple long songs, and I was all set. Anyway, it's been real busy also because I know Harry's talked about it, I think you've talked about it with him and Jay Murray, the SECURE Act is kind of making people go a little nuts, and so they're concerned about their retirement plans and when exactly their kids, and in some cases their grandkids, are going to be taking money from their retirements, and their plan was to provide a retirement for their kids in the future. But if the kids have to take it out over the next 10 years, which is what the SECURE Act would allow them to do, only stretch it for 10 years, it means there might be a lot of money that's exchanging hands earlier than you want it. So I've had a bunch of people come in because they're thinking about doing some extra planning just for their retirement. So a lot going on.
And look, Frank's calling us. Good morning,
hey Frank.
Good morning, everyone.
Frank knows how to parallel park.
listen, this question came to me just before I fell asleep, and it's a very important one. In the event of my unfortunate demise, who is authorized to sign my federal and state income tax returns? And then is there any complication there? Is there any instrument I can prepare to, that after I die that someone is authorized to do that? I don't want to get into a, you know, I do have a pour over will with my my estate planning, but I'm not sure of, and I couldn't get an answer from the CPA either.
Really? The CPA wouldn't answer?
Well, it was his associate. The CPA might, wasn't in. Let's say his associate wasn't sure. But
and
I wondered.
Dave can answer that question
for
you right now.
I was
going
to say, Frank, should we first talk about the things that you think about right before you go to bed? Because this is.
I get some of my best ideas before I fall asleep.
Okay. And this is the best idea? Really?
Well, I mean, listen, when you're my age, you got to start thinking about things like this. And I'm thinking, here's my, I get a good refund, and I'm thinking, well, who's able to sign my my tax return? Do you guys know anything, or should I pursue it with the CPA?
Well, I think we have a handle on this. So obviously you're not going to be able to sign it, and your power of attorney wouldn't be able to sign it because you don't have a power of attorney once you're no longer with us. So it would turn to who is authorized under the state in New York to act for your estate, and that's where we'd get into your executor or your administrator, and there would be a really tough question involved, which is how much money exactly is coming back and what how much effort or cost is going to be involved in getting that person you named in your pour over will as your executor to be recognized by the state of New York as your executor, i.e. going through probate. Now, theoretically, you wouldn't be getting back a $30,000, and it would be in small estate territory. So the process is a little easier, but we've had situations where, you know, someone passes away, different scenario, family gets a check in their name for $200, and they say, what do we do with this check for $200? This is the only thing that they technically have that has to go through probate. And we say, well, here's how you get to the surrogate's court if you want to fill out forms with them, because you don't want us, you don't want to pay us to get $200. So the question you asked is who could sign? It's going to be that administrator or that executor of your estate. The second part of it is it going to be worth it? And is, you know, obviously no one knows when they're going to pass away. So I don't want you to always plan to owe money when you file your taxes. But unfortunately, there might be fact patterns where there's money that's technically owed, and we can't get to that without a little bit of work.
Okay, but assuming I die with no debt, and I've got all my beneficiaries lined up, there's no problem with that. You say I have to go through surrogate's court and have the will probated to establish an executor or executrix just so they can sign my income tax return?
Well, literally no one can sign for you, right? So we got to get to a point where someone can sign for you.
Yeah, unless they forge your signature, I guess.
Just sign it in advance, Frank. Just sign the form.
There's no legal instrument that...
There is. Basically what happens is there is an affidavit that that can be signed whenever you're looking. I mean, in New York, we call them a 1310 affidavit because that's the statute that covers assets that are left in a person's name whenever they pass away. There is an affidavit that can be filed with your tax return that says that the person passed away and that you're claiming the tax refund for them. And I'm going to get you that form in just a second. Dave's going to talk to you for a second.
So what Debbie's referring to is a form that we could use when an estate is a small estate, a very small estate.
Mm-hmm.
So if there were other assets out there, right, in the normal course of doing a probate, obviously we could take care of that final tax return. Where it's a small enough amount or where it's just a car below a certain value, we can get away with this affidavit. So again, if you know, we're involved and we need to be really involved, there might be a cost associated with it. So my example of $200 or something like that might make it a little cost prohibitive to try to go after that money. But there is an easier process to deal with something like that, right? We don't want to go through a full probate for a couple $100. But the idea behind all of this is that affidavit's going to allow the court to essentially temporarily authorize someone to sign this little thing for you for this little amount of money. But regardless, we need the state of New York to approve someone to be able to sign for you after you've passed.
Can make an appointment to come into your office and have an affidavit prepared.
So, right? So I just Googled it, which is my favorite thing to do. And it says, use form 1310 to claim a refund on behalf of a deceased taxpayer. If you're claiming a refund on behalf of a deceased taxpayer, you must file form 1310 unless either of the following applies. Your surviving spouse filing for an original amended joint return with the decedent. So if you're a surviving spouse, you could sign it. If not, you'd have to use a form 1310. And so that's the form that you use to, it says basically you write deceased on the return. And then you fill out this affidavit, which is the 1310 affidavit, to be able to claim their refund.
All right. You'll have to, so the form is prepared. It's not signed with this form, because I've died. The form 1310 will allow me to...
Not you, because you're dead.
Yeah, you're not... It's not like you pre-signed the form. It's going to be next of kin that's going to be in a position to sign.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I'm saying, let's say the tax is prepared, but I pass away before I can sign the federal and state income tax return. The form 1310 would allow someone who I've designated or who... Is that right? To or whatever, an affidavit? It can be taken care of without going through probate?
Well, it depends. So, if you look at the form itself, it says that a surviving spouse can sign, right?
Yeah, but I don't have a surviving spouse.
I know. And a court-appointed or certified personal representative, which is what Dave was talking about, right? And then it goes down to say a person under A or B. So it goes into a little bit more detail as to who can claim it. So the problem is they're probably going to make the check payable to the estate, and then you're kind of back to square one.
So I'm back to the surrogate's court.
For a small estate administration, yeah.
That's a horrible way to do business, isn't it?
Yeah.
You think you could designate someone to do that without going through probate, which is very expensive, right?
Well, it's not. It depends on the amount of money it is.
Oh.
Right? So if it's under a certain amount, it's fairly easy, right? Mm-hmm. The filing fee is only a dollar. Where they run into expenses is when you have to pay an attorney to do all the paperwork for it.
Okay.
But it's a fairly easy thing. Don't worry, Frank. I got you covered.
Well, what we typically would do, and so now we're acting as if you're no longer with us, right? We would go over your estate plan with your family and whoever you designated as an executor. We would do that not because we're going to probate your estate. We would do it to make sure that we don't have to, make sure nothing fell through the cracks. If there's a lawsuit your estate has against something because something happened, right, that obviously would be your estate that takes care of that. We're in the territory of it's a small estate, and we'd say these are the steps you got to take. This is the affidavit you use for the car. This is what you could use for the tax return. Would you like us to help, or do you want to go it alone? And on this part, it's really the only time where we'll say to people, you kind of could do it alone. If we're sure it's just a check or two, it's not a big deal. There aren't a lot of creditors chomping at the bit about your estate. It's something that someone will be able to do by themselves and avoid that cost. The annoyance is unavoidable. It's an annoying type of fact pattern. And perhaps you want to say to your accountant, look, I don't know when my final year is going to be here, but could we make it so I'm never continually, by design, owed a lot of money? Could I, adjust my withholding so that I'm close to even Steven on this, so I don't have to put someone in this position?
Holding, so bring it down, I'll pay in quarterly.
Something like that, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I would focus on not really worrying about this too much, because there's not much you could do about it.
Okay.
Thanks for the call,
Frank. Thank you for the time.
No problem. Sweet dreams in the future, okay?
Okay.
All right. Bye.
Take care, Frank. You know, excellent questions this time of year.
It's a real question. These are things that we deal with. It's one little area where there's not a ton of planning that we could actually do for it, but it's logistics. It's who can do these things. And, you know, when it comes to, well, who's going to sell my house after I've passed away? We want to make sure that you avoid probate. That's pretty much our most important goal. Everything's an offshoot of that, right? Making sure things go to the right people, the right way, with the right rules, if need be. But if we could avoid surrogates court and save you thousands of dollars, well, and it sure makes a trust make a lot more sense, because we could kind of streamline this whole process later on. What's happened is this time of year is a perfect example, Debbie. If your loved one passed away in November, they owned a home, right? They were, you know, dad lived in a home, he was a widower, he passes away. You and your siblings are planning on selling that house one day, right? We all agree no one's going to live in dad's house, we want to sell it. It's November. Your area code is 518. Guess what's not selling in November, December, January, February, probably March? That house. Heating bills, right? Ongoing expenses just to clear the lot, make sure that everything's all right in that house. And, oh, by the way, even if it was September and we could still probably get it on the market, you got to get through the court to have the authority, right, to sell it. You need to be a signatory for the estate. Just so many times, Debbie, people come in and they say, I'm the executor for my dad. And what do we say? We say, I'm sorry for your loss. And they say, oh, no, dad's still alive. We say, well, thankfully, you're not executor yet. You're just a name on a piece of paper.
Right.
Right? We'd have to go through probate. So if we could avoid that cost, and on average, it's thousands on average. Sure, mm-hmm. we've had ones that are $10,000. We've had ones that are probably $1,000. But if you could avoid that mess because of time restrictions, that's non-negotiable, right? Your estate's going to be open for a certain period of time.
And if you don't have access to any money, not only are you going to have the bills, who's going to pay them?
It's the worst fact patterns always involve probate.
Yes, that's the way they it do. Is. They do. It's funny because we always talk about stuff on the radio and you never know what's going to hit home with people. And the people that I met yesterday, he came in. The reason they came in, well, they had New Year's resolution, number one. But number two, he heard us talk about the fact that even if you're married and you have a deed that's just in one of the spouse's names, that without a will, when that person passes, the surviving spouse is going to be splitting that property with kids. And he's like, so I went down to the county clerk and I looked and they said, yeah, my name was the only one on it. And, you know, for one reason or another, the wife's name wasn't on it. And she was like, oh, yeah, we're going to go see the lawyer because I'm going to get my name on it. So he told me, I heard that. He goes, and now I know that the power of attorney is 13 pages long and it used to be one or three pages. And I'm like, wow, you were actually listening. And he's like, yeah.
That's
he's
funny.
Like, we sit and listen to you and drink our coffee.
Well, good morning, whoever you are out there. Thanks for listening. Well, it's so true. And there's so many different reasons for it. And a lot of, you know, when you come in and or you call, you schedule an appointment, we're giving you like a two-sided, say, call it six sides of an estate planning questionnaire. And people will fill it out and they'll come in with a pile of things. And sometimes we got to go through those documents, sometimes we don't. And they tend to get upset when we don't go through all the things that they prepared. But the act of pulling these things and seeing, do I have a beneficiary and a backup beneficiary on this asset? Which column do I put this CD in? Is this CD in my name? Is it in both of our names? Is it just in my wife's name? You got to know because it matters. Even though the default in New York, right, is that things are going to really go to your spouse, or your will says everything goes to my spouse, or your... Not everything is... Well, it might all end up there, but how it gets there is the point, right? Could we avoid a probate because we have two names on a CD as opposed to one? Well, my name's on the mortgage. Well, is it on the deed? Because you could have two names on a mortgage, right?
Right.
Ben, if you want, you can co-sign on my mortgage whenever you feel like it. You're not getting on the deed.
Somehow I'm not thinking of feeling like doing that.
Well, if you
without being on the deed.
If you change your mind.
I'll let you know.
Let me know.
Sure.
So it's possible to own things and sure, wife is using the property. And what would, just because I don't own it, if my husband dies, I'm going to get kicked out of the house? Well, no, that's not the point. But you don't own that house after his death unless it was titled in a way where that automatically happens.
Speaking of that, your article, I just read your article about words do matter.
Oh, words matter, yes.
And I thought that that was a great article.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's in the Capital Region Living February edition, and they said, can you write a law article for Valentine's Day?
Yeah,
and
I said, love article.
I said, no, there's nothing. But the angle, and thank you for bringing that up, was the idea that the word spouse matters, the word child matters. And even in our questionnaire, I think a couple weeks, Jane Marie and I were talking about it. It's one of the loveliest things in the world. We have a lot of clients who are in their second relationships, right? Second marriages. They have kids from prior relationships. In some cases, the second marriage started when his daughter was 2 years old, right? And now they have kids together,
right?
As well. And guess what? She, in her questionnaire, says, I have three kids. I don't have one stepchild and two kids. I have three kids, mm-hmm. right? I helped raise this girl. I know she's got a biological mother, but she's my daughter.
Right.
That's how she looks at it. It's the most lovely thing in the world. But when you fill out a questionnaire saying you have three kids and you don't specify that, we got to know when we're drafting, we use words like issue, which means our bloodline.
Mm-hmm.
And if your child is actually not your child, I know how you feel about them. I know how you treat them. But if it's legally not your child, that means all the difference in the world. Or if your spouse, well, you call them your spouse, you refer to someone as the ball and chain, but you didn't actually get married because it's a second marriage.
Significant other.
You don't have those marital rights.
No.
And you know that when it comes to health insurance during your life, right? You know that you're not going to be on a non-spouse's plan. But in death, the word spouse means a lot. It means everything in some situations. In fact, for Medicaid planning, right? When we have a husband and wife that come in, husband needs care, nursing home or home, knowing that they're a spouse, that they're married, is huge because we know we have an unlimited spousal transfer rule.
Right.
And our hands are tied if they're not spouses. Well, we're like spouses. Unfortunately, it's not horseshoes, so it doesn't help to like spouses.
To be close.
Be close, yeah.
We'd love for you to give us a call at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900 or toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. And I did want to mention before we go to the bottom of the hour that we do have seminars that are coming up in this month. I was going to say in February. Duh, it is February. They're on wills versus trusts. There's one February 25th at 2 in the afternoon at the Courtyard by Marriott on Washington Ave. There's one February 26th at 2 p.m. at the Residence Inn Excelsior Ave. That's in Saratoga Springs. And February 27th at 10 in the morning. That one's at Staybridge Suites on Wolf Road. And February 27th at 10 a.m. at the Queensbury Hotel in Glens Falls. So you can call our office or you can go online to our website at www.herzoglaw.com. I don't know. Do you still have to put the www in?
I don't know if it matters because they, even if it's not the website, usually it'll suggest the website, mm-hmm. In the search.
It just sounds cooler when you say www. Yeah. Anyway, so you can go to our website at www.herzoglaw.com and you can register for one of the seminars, or you can just scroll through the website and see all the things that all the areas that we practice in, see the pictures of the attorneys, all that cool things like that.
You could print out the pictures. You could throw darts at the pictures.
There
you do whatever you want.
How'd you know that's what I do?
So, because every now and then I feel a pain in my forehead and I don't know why it's happening.
So again, those are the seminars that we have in February and you can go online and register for them or you can call our office. The office phone number is 518-465-7581. Stacy's at extension 126. She's our scheduler. And again, the office phone number is 465-7581. And her extension is 126.
So you mentioned the topic is wills versus trusts. And I know we do have a couple minutes before the bottom half. There are different kinds of trusts. And without hitting you over the head and saying like, duh, when we have a seminar about wills versus trusts, we talk about different kinds of trusts.
Right.
Right. And the pros and cons of it. And because we're so focused on at least having a good plan, the right things go to the right people, the right way, the right time, and avoiding probate, because we're so focused on that, we really encourage people to explore the trusts and get the right information about it, right? Some people think that when you need to have a certain amount of money to have a trust. That's not true at all. You need to be a gazillionaire. Nope, definitely not. If you have a house, in fact, that's a rather illiquid asset when it comes to a death, and that's usually the reason why we're going through a probate. So we really love throwing houses into trusts. There are different kinds of trusts, as I mentioned, right? A lot of the ones that we like are when you turn a certain age, we want you to pay attention to long-term care expenses. But even if you have long-term care insurance, and a lot of people out there do, and you have a really good plan, which some of you do, right? A lot of you have long-term care insurance. Many of you don't have a very good plan, and you should know what kind of plan you have. But for those out there that have a good plan, or you say, no, thank you, I'm all set with my long-term care exposure, I still want you to avoid probate, right? Debbie still wants you to think about a revocable trust, a trust where you're your own trustee, and you can, it's just like any other trust, it's holding your house, so we can guarantee we avoid probate. One day that trust will end, typically because you passed away, and that trust will say where everything goes, so it's kind of like a will, except the big except is we don't have to go through probate, because you technically didn't own the house anymore, you're trusted. Now, when it comes to star exemptions and who pays the bills, life's the same. It's all the same.
Nothing changes.
Right? We don't get too nitty-gritty on labels for these trusts, but if we were talking to your accountant, we'd say, you know, it's a grantor trust, it's this, it's that, and they know how to treat it, and you're good to go. But we're able to save your family the inconvenience of a protracted probate, as well as all the filing fees, attorney's fees that go with that. So even if you're sitting there and you're saying, well, you guys always say long-term care, I got that covered, you still want to avoid probate. My folks have long-term care insurance. I'm happy for them. I don't know if I agreed with them doing it, because they've had it for a really long time, and I hope they don't go anywhere for a really long time, so they'll continue to pay for a while. But that was their long-term care plan. They still have a revocable trust to make sure their house avoids probate and so on. So something to think about, and if you're saying, well, that's interesting, come for an hour and a half to one of these seminars that Debbie mentioned. It's a great way to get introduced and kind of learn some of the lingo. Sometimes people say, well, who's the executor of my trust? And I say, come to the seminar, because you're kind of there. We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And we're back for the second half of our show. I'm Debbie Verney.
Morning, I'm Dave Kubikin.
And if you'd like to be our first caller this half hour, the phone number here is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900 or 1-800-WROW-590. We'd love for you to give us a call. And whenever we went to the break, we were talking about revocable trusts, yeah. But you know, trusts are nice, Dave, but I think that the most important document that you can do is a power of attorney. What do you think about that?
Well, you're right. You know you're right. You're like setting it up on a tee for t-ball for an eight-year-old to smack. Anyway, absolutely. And first of all, as Debbie mentioned, call us with your fact patterns. And in the absence of you calling, we're going to give you some fact patterns that we think are interesting or trends that we're seeing. And one of them is an issue that I hope it works out for the client. But it's about why we don't want you to wait, at least on the most basic and important documents like a power of attorney, because it can really end up screwing things up. And again, I hope that won't be the case. But for us, this is a typical fact pattern. So Debbie, the client's up in Washington County, single male, sisters help him out here and there. He wants to stay at home for the rest of his life, and they don't think he's going to be able to do it alone for much longer. And he begs to differ.
Okay. Of course.
Right. And so I've been talking with his family members, and he was receptive to meeting me. I was going to go up there, and at least, you know, I was going to be prepared with all the documents and starting actually community Medicaid to really, the idea is let's get him some help so that he can stay where he wants to stay longer rather than wait for a fall or something to then put, you know, expedite the situation and possibly get nursing homes involved. So let's get him some help, but let's start with just the power of attorney. So that he gets used to the idea that other people can help him. And sure, so I actually talked to the sister a couple of days before, and I kind of game plan. Look, no pressure. If no one signs a thing, that's fine. I'm more than happy to drive up there. But I think I'm going to be pretty good at talking to him. If he's reasonable, we'll talk pros and cons and whatever. And so the sister had my cell phone number. And the morning of, I get a phone call at 7 in the morning. Now, half of my face has shaving cream on it because I'm shaving because it's 7 in the morning. So I'm like, nobody calls me at 7 a.m. with a 518 number. There's something must be up. So I pick up and there's shaving cream all over my phone. And I say, hello. And she's like, you
great visual, by the way.
Yes,
great
thank
visual.
You. So she says to me these words, and I know these are bad words. She says, you were supposed to meet with my brother and I this morning. Now, I know I'm not late because it's 7 in the morning. And I said, oh, no, what happened? And she said, well, and she's almost crying as she's saying, and she said, the paramedics are here. He wasn't feeling good, and he was having headaches, and now they think he's got to go to the hospital, and we're not sure. And I said, do you know what hospital? Is he conscious? Because if nothing else, I can race to wherever to get just the power of attorney signed, just so that she and her sister could do other things if he's able to sign it, right?
As long as he has capacity.
As he has capacity. And she wasn't sure. I said, let's keep in touch. And so over the course of the morning, she kept in touch. And turned out he had to go get some scans done. And I think everything is going to be all right, and et cetera, et cetera. Why all the dramatic fact pattern? Because if he had a power of attorney done one day before, 10 years before, 20 years before, whatever, right? The worst case scenario is a little better, right? The health part, nothing we could help with, right? That we're stuck. Whatever's going to happen is going to happen, and hopefully he's going to be okay. But on the legal side, the stuff that we handle, right, and the options that the sisters have from paying his bills to dealing with a rehab center if he needs rehab at some point to just dealing with the hospital and advocating for him and the healthcare proxy so that they can be heard, right? We say you got to have those basic documents, whether you're 18 or older, because you have to have those documents if you're 18 or older, because this stuff could happen. And unbelievable timing. Literally the morning I'm going to have them signed, we can't because he has to go to the hospital. And it's like the most ridiculous fact. It's not made up. You look on my calendar, it was this past Wednesday. And I was like, man, oh man. It's so important, you know, like these details matter. And obviously the power of attorney is important because of the things like a gifting rider and being able to have even your spouse set some stuff up, move some things around. But in this fact pattern, I mean, like if things go the wrong way, this could be tens and tens of thousands of dollars of impact. Because if nothing else, we might need to do a guardianship if he's not okay.
Right.
Right. That's at the very least. The time that's gone by to make all that happen, right, is going to cost money, because the sooner we're able to get him eligible for a nursing home, if one day he needs that, that might be 14 or 15 grand a month we're saving if we get him eligible a month or two earlier. So real example of why these basic documents matter, and then why you need to update them from time to time. Make sure you still like the people who are your agents, and people laugh when we say that. But it's kind of, these are really important they're just in case documents. You got to make sure you have the right people at the right time and update your documents every now and then.
That's right. You got to have the right people in the right positions.
And life changes. You know, we have clients, we have young clients who get married, then they have kids. And so they're in more frequently to change their documents. We have old clients who don't think that their brother is trusty material anymore because he's older. We unfortunately have bad fact patterns where people and loved ones pass away, and that's why we're updating documents. But it's incredibly important, this like maintenance of your plan, just to make sure everything makes sense.
And we have Mary from Albany. Good morning, Mary.
Yes, good morning. I have a quick question, I think. Can a person who is not listed as a beneficiary in a will contest that will? And therefore, would it be a good idea to have a no contest clause?
You know, that's a great question. It just, you're like this answer, it just depends. So whenever a will gets probated, what they have to do is notify your heirs at law. Okay, so even if you don't have them in your will, they still have to get notifications. So classic example would be, say, you have a second marriage and there were two kids from prior marriage, and kind of going back to Dave's fact pattern, and there's one child that you have together, right? So the husband passes away and he has two kids from a prior marriage and he leaves everything to the wife. Well, we still have to notify those two kids that were his, and they could come in and say, no, 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 she was a wicked stepmother. You know, he would have never left her the money. She had her foot on his oxygen tube when she made him sign the will, leaving everything to her. So just because they're not mentioned in the will doesn't mean that they can't contest it if they would have inherited if he had passed away with no will. And if you put a no contest clause in there, this is kind of my answer to that. So if you say, okay, if you contest this will, you're not going to get anything, right? Well, they weren't getting anything in the first place. So what have they got to lose?
Okay.
So sometimes people will say, and if anybody contests this will, they lose their bequest. But if they're not getting anything, then, you know, they've got nothing to lose. But if you left them something, if you say, I leave them $1,000, and then they contest it, they lose their $1,000, then they're out their court fees and the $1,000. So
okay.
It just depends on what the fact pattern is as to whether it's really going to make sense to put that kind of language in there.
Okay, thank you very much.
Hold on. I want to add one point. So everything Debbie says is 100% correct, right? They have to have a financial stake and et cetera, et cetera. They have to do better if they succeeded, and those that clauses could be very helpful. They can't contest an estate where there's nothing in the estate. Okay? So that's, again, sorry to always be talking about big picture void probate stuff, but one of the biggest reasons, and we don't talk, you know, we talk about it when it's like a celebrity death or something, because Robin Williams' second wife wants this and that, and if he just did trusts, right, he could avoid that contest. This is real deal, too. It's much harder for someone to try to contest your trust, right? It's more on a contractual level. They got to claim that you didn't have capacity to sign this trust, but they don't automatically get notice, like Debbie was saying, in an estate, right? It's a little different. So yes, we want people to have a will, and you could have those clauses. Man, it would be great if we avoid probate. It would be great if you have a trust that's holding those assets, because it's far harder for anyone to try to contest the trust compared to a will.
Okay, very good. Thank you again.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
Alrighty.
You know, everybody says, well, our trust's for everyone. That's why they need to come to the seminars.
So my answer is yes. It's just they happen to cost money, so that's a business decision. But if they were free, you should have two. I don't know. Why not?
There you go. Exactly.
I can't think of a downside, even to the Medicaid trust. Other than that, you just need to make a decision. How am I going to deal with this? Like, I care about this thing happening in the future, or I don't care about it, right? That's like step one. But avoid probate and have rules. So, you know, there was a young client of ours, so a daughter of a client who came in, and in her 20s, she said, I'm going to do a will, healthcare, proxy, power of attorney. And for us, that's rare, right? Like, you don't get a lot of 28-year-olds coming in to do their documents, right?
No.
So
I didn't know you were waiting for an answer.
Yeah. So she came in. She came in again, right? She came in like 2 years later. She came in last week in our new Clifton Park office. By the way,
that's right.
We got to plug our new Clifton Park office.
That's
so. She came into Clifton Park, and she said, "I got married." I said, "Congratulations!" And she said, and I'm pregnant. And I said, oh, congratulations. So we're going to update her documents, and we're going to do some documents for her husband. And so we had this weird conversation that we tend to have with people, which is, that's so great, you're about to have a child, you know, boy, girl, this, that, whatever. Okay, now, if you and your husband both die, when does this baby get money? And she's like, wait, what? I'm like, well, we're doing your documents, and we're planning on not just one kid, but more kids down the road. And in fact, if we do it the right way, we could even plan for grandkids. But if, God forbid, something happens, how do you want your child to get money? Who's going to be the guardian? Who's going to be in charge of the money? Because if you have nothing set out, it's 18, which is right. A problem. So, you know, she's going to come back to me with a couple ages she thinks is appropriate. Great. Now the conversation was with life insurance and retirement plans and all these other assets that she and her husband are going to accumulate. And the question was, well, on my life insurance, don't put your son as the backup beneficiary, right? Well, you said avoid probate. Life insurance avoids probate, and I wanted to go to my son. The life insurance doesn't have any rules for when your son gets the money. So we say direct it into the estate.
Yep.
As an example, just to get to the rules. Now, she could also one day, she and her husband could decide to do a trust, and they could direct the money to go to the trust. So we avoid probate, and we have the rules. There's so many different configurations to how it works out. But, you know, our goal is the right people at the right time getting money. You guys decide that. We just make it happen. But there are more efficient ways of making it happen, and that's where those trusts come in.
And yeah. We have another caller. We have Steve from Red Hook. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. Just a curiosity question. If someone has an irrevocable trust, and then later on today, they decide just to have a plain will, which takes precedent?
Okay. So I have questions for you. So what does this person own when they pass away?
The usual stuff.
You know, house.
Savings accounts, house. Okay.
And so then the follow-up question to that is the house in the trust or is the house just in that person's name?
In the trust.
Okay. So the trust is going to take precedent on that house. For the savings account, for the finances, if it's just in that person's name, the question is there a beneficiary on that account? If the answer is yes, it goes to that beneficiary automatically, right? Whatever is the death beneficiary on the account. And then the third is if there's no beneficiary, it's just a savings and checking account just in your name, that would be governed by your will. Because that's not in the trust yet, and it's not directed to go anywhere. There's no beneficiary on it.
What about if stocks are into a trust? How does that handle?
So the trust will decide how those stocks go, unless the stock account has a beneficiary. So the vehicle that's holding the money, right? It's a TD Ameritrade account. It's a E-Trade account, or it's a life insurance policy. You put the cash value of the policy into the trust. You put your brokerage account into your trust. If that account, if that policy still has a beneficiary on it, on the actual policy, that beneficiary is going to control. That's where the money is going to go. If it's just sitting in the trust and there's no beneficiary on the actual document, on the actual brokerage account, mm-hmm. It's going to go based on what the trust says.
Not the will. Interesting.
Yeah. Wills are far less important than people think they are, because the reality is that if I died right now, if Debbie died right now, if Ben died right now, sorry to be depressing, guys.
Oh, you just, I'm just sorry. As usual, just
not
being
all at the
realistic
same time. That would be odd. That would be,
and it would leave a mess for the next ones,
yes,
coming
it
in.
It would be while you're out trying to teach me how to parallel park.
What's Jay going to do on Monday? Anyway, we have things that have beneficiaries, right? Like I have things that have my wife as a beneficiary, right? Debbie may have things that she's leaving to her son. Ben may have things he's leaving to his daughter, right? We all have accounts that automatically are avoiding probate because of the way they're titled or because there's beneficiaries. So those are automatically not going to be governed by your will, right? So we better make sure we have the right people at the right times. And that's why sometimes we are directing people to leave it in their estate to go through this probate thing that we always try to say is awful, but it's only because there's rules on how they get money. Most of the time, we're going to say, hey, Ben, do a trust, because that way it's a little cleaner, and you still get to control everything and switch things and do whatever you want to do.
Hmm. All right, interesting. Thank you for the answer. Appreciate it.
No problem.
You're welcome. Have a great afternoon.
You know, Debbie, I was with one of our previous callers, I think it was with Mary. Ben held a sign up to me that said, it depends, because that should be on our business cards.
And
Herzog Law Firm.
It depends.
I had something to add to that fact pattern.
Uh-huh.
If we were in Boston, Wicked Stepmother would be good.
Wicked, yeah,
so,
Wicked.
I don't think stepping on the tube is a good thing from a Wicked Stepmother.
That was a good visual that Debbie had there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I had an estate when I was in the law firm in Syracuse that we represented the executors, and the gentleman had a lot of assets. He had some that were even out of the country. And he named his second wife, his daughter from his first marriage, and the CPA all his executors.
If that's what he wanted, that's okay.
Oh, yeah, it was ugly. But anyway, it was one of those things where there were a lot of different assets, and whenever they would start talking about things, they would refer to the co-executor, who was the second wife, as the Wicked Stepmother. And she actually was a nurse, and they all always said that.
Oh, boy.
And they always said that, you know, she was
on duty that day.
Yeah, exactly. It's like they always said that, you know, she was the one that did everything. And, you know, it was interesting because when you have an estate, the bills that the decedent signs for before they pass away are debts of the decedent, yeah. Right? So if, say, the house is being redone or something like that, you have someone that's ill, which kind of was the situation, like he was ill, they knew that he was going to pass away, so she went and had, like, the house redone, right? All new carpets, all new furniture.
I just want to, for the record, say I don't like where this is going.
Anyway.
I just want to be on the record for that.
And so had all sprinklers put in and had him sign for all of the expenses, and then when he passed away, his estate paid for him, right? So she gets her house all fixed up, the estate paid for it, and then she gets her bequest. So I thought that was kind of smart on her part. But
smart's a word for it. I can think of some other words.
So now you know why they were calling her the Wicked Stepmother,
yeah.
Right? But, you know, we can't make this stuff up.
Yeah.
There's fact patterns like that. So you need to think about these things when you're naming beneficiaries and when you're naming executors. Make sure that the people that you name are people that are actually going to work together as opposed to having opposing interests.
This is a good point here. So how many times, Debbie, have you had, you're going through their questionnaire and they you're saying, okay, you have three kids. How are the kids doing? And, oh, the kids are fine. They just don't talk to each other and they kind of hate each other's guts and whatever. And then you get to the point where you're like, okay, who are going to be your trustees? And they're like, all three kids. Who's your executor? Oh, no, all three kids. Because after their parent dies, that's the time where they're going to really suck it up and get back together and make it all work.
Yeah, because that's, you know,
doesn't work out that
way. They're all going to stand together and sing Kumbaya, not,
well,
no.
The other thing, though, is people think, well, I'm going to name all my kids as executor because I don't want any of them to be upset that they were left out. And we always explain, like, this is not a fun job,
nope.
Right? Like, it really isn't. And when you're a trustee, most of the time you're not even being compensated for it. This is the person who you think is going to take care of whatever's got to be taken care of. And that's kind of it. This is not a fun job. They're talking to me or Debbie or Jane Marie. That's not a fun thing to do all the time, right? They have to deal with all the, you know, the crud after you've passed away. You don't have to name everyone. Okay. It doesn't have to be a family member.
No.
It could be a friend. It doesn't have to be someone younger than you. That happens a lot. Harry and I were talking about it a couple weeks ago where there was a client who asked whether I would be their executor and their trustee. And I said, no way.
Mm-mm.
But is there, you know, it could be a friend. It could be this person. It could be that person. I have a brother, but he's 3 years older than me. Well, that's all right. Life doesn't always work out that the people 3 years older than you pass away first.
Right, right? True.
You pick the right people.
It's very true. And as far as kids go, again, like he said, if they don't get along now, they're not going to get along after you pass away. And sometimes even if they get along now, they may not get along after you pass away. Yeah.
And if they get along later, that's great. It'll be in their unofficial capacities as siblings and not as executor and co-executor and co-executor. You can make a bad situation extremely difficult because, and expensive because, we have a fact pattern just like this. It's mom's still alive and it's, you know, she's in a nursing home. Kids don't like each other very much. And both of them are empowered to speak for her on the power of attorney. And one emails us and the other one calls us. And we say, do you guys talk to one another? Because we just answered all your questions once. And now we're talking to you, answering them again. And now mom's being charged twice because we're spending a lot of time doing the same thing twice because you guys can't communicate. So it's not only philosophically like not going to work out or it's wishful thinking. It could actually make things quite expensive unnecessarily.
Yeah, I have an estate right now where there's only two kids, right? And they're both the executors and they are not getting along. They both have different ideas about how the estate should go. And because they're both fiduciaries, right? And we represent them. It's like one calls and finally we just said, look, we can't represent you both because you have conflicting interests. You need to each get a different attorney because we would get a letter from this one that says, this is what I want to do. And a letter from this one saying, this is what I want to do.
So like one saying, no, let's not sell the house. Let's rent out the house. And the other one saying, well, no, let's sell the house.
Right.
And well, okay, you could buy me out. I don't want to buy you out.
Exactly.
Mom wanted us to keep the house. Well, no,
she
didn't.
Did you read the file?
No, I didn't. I read your diary.
Oh, no. That's not good.
So we do have some seminars coming up next week, the final week of February, right before March and spring and all that good stuff. February 25th at 2 p.m., we're going to be at the Courtyard by Marriott next to SUNY at 1455 Washington Avenue. That's February 25th at 2 p.m. The next day, the 26th, a Wednesday, at 2 p.m., we'll be up in Saratoga Springs at the Residence Inn on Excelsior Avenue. Following day, we'll be in two places at the same time. I don't know how we're going to do that, but we will do it.
We're good at that.
Yeah. February 27th, Thursday at 10 a.m., we'll be at the Staybridge Suites right outside of Colony Center Mall. That's on Wolf Road in Albany. And we'll also be up at the Queensbury Hotel at 88 Ridge Street in Glens Falls, the newly redone beautiful Queensbury Hotel. And the topic of the month is wills versus trusts. And it kind of was, I guess, the topic of this morning because, well, this is what we do, number one. Mm. But there's a lot of confusion, Debbie. And if nothing else, the seminar is a great way to confuse you less and then set the stage for you guys maybe coming in to meet with one of us for like an hour where we're not talking about theoretical stuff that may not apply to your family. We are talking about your fact pattern, your family, your wishes, your desires. We create a custom plan that addresses all of those things. And, you know, as much as I love it when people come in and the first thing they say is, we're here because we need a trust, that actually is nice to hear. Half the time they don't.
True.
They'd be surprised.
True.
Our job is to kind of, you know, recommend. And
true.
Decipher.
I wanted to plug our Clifton Park office.
Oh, yeah.
So we have an office in Clifton Park now, and it is right off of 146. And if you didn't know, we've also added a full-time real estate attorney,
yes.
Dan Glasser. He's awesome. So real estate, we're doing full-blown real estate, whereas we used to just do it for clients.
We do partially blown real estate now.
Partially blown, yes.
Full-blown.
And I wanted to give a plug for the Saratoga Chamber of Commerce. They're doing what's called a leap of kindness. And it's what are you going to do with the extra day that you have in February this year, right?
Oh.
So.
And it's a Saturday, I believe. Saturday?
Yeah. So yeah. So Saturday, what they're doing is they had a lot of not-for-profits basically say what they needed. And then the Saratoga Chamber put it out there and said, kind of pay it forward, right? So for the extra day, we're going to do a leap of kindness. And so we signed up to help three of the charities. So
we like the office did?
We like the office
did. I had no idea.
Yes. See?
I should probably read my emails.
Yes. It's on Facebook too.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, so we're collecting canned goods, and we're collecting toiletry items. We have three different charities that we're going to donate them to. And if you look on the Chamber website, or you can go on our Facebook page and look at it and see the different things that we're collecting for them, and then we'll be giving them to them to give to the charities.
Do you know when we're giving it to them?
We're going to do it, I think.
Is it actually on the 20th or around?
Well, it's not on that Saturday. I think we're going to do it on that Friday.
Well, so I don't think you're saying this to say that we're bragging that we're doing this.
If
you want to come to one of our four offices and drop off any of those things, mm-hmm. at least call our office first to tell us, because in the case of Clifton Park, we may not always have someone there. But if you're a client, even if you're not, and you think that's a swell idea and you got a bunch of toiletries that you want to donate, we're happy to accept them.
Or canned goods.
And canned goods, any of our offices. And you can call the office at 518-465-7581 to do that. While you're there, you could set up a consult or review your documents if you haven't looked at them in a while, and bring your shopping back. That would be great.
Definitely. That's the big plan. I'm going to Target today after the radio.
Ah, Target.
Target, yes. Gotta go stock up on that, and Nellie needs dog food. What can I say?
Well, you know, why don't you do it tomorrow when it's like 5 degrees warmer? Or are you going to do it on your way?
I'm going to do my way home.
Oh, I gotcha. Well, it's been very nice to see you, Debbie. I know this is a treat for us to actually see each other face to face. Usually it's just emails back and forth.
It is. We're usually in different offices at different times. It's very fun that, you know, you'd think that the four of us, that we see each other all the time. We generally don't.
Yeah. I see people walking in and walking out like two ships passing in the night.
That's it. Because I love to stay out in Saratoga any chance I get. So you guys have a great day. Stay warm. We'll talk to you next week.
For listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.